All right, Common Sense Ohio, norms in jury duty. The federal government is shut down, but we're still here. Comey's indicted. Letitia James is indicted. The world's in chaos. Ohio State's winning. We're going to cover it all right here on Common Sense Ohio, coming at you October 15, 2025. Brett, I think we can handle this without the anchor.
We'll be good. We'll be good.
I got a text last night, or we got a text the other day. I think it was yesterday. Thanks for the notice, Norm.
Yeah.
That he's in jury duty.
And I totally misread it going, they are actually have a defense attorney on the jury? I thought it was you. I misread the text.
I might be their worst nightmare or their greatest ally.
I know. That's the thing. I was thinking, what a story.
Yeah. So I thought this would be a good opportunity for me as a geek and sort of a historian and maybe even a little bit of an intellect at times on this stuff. I thought we'd talk a little bit about jury duty and the history of jury duty. And first and foremost, I get the call most often from when I started practicing law. I don't get it as much anymore because people know my answer.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I got this notice that I'm supposed to show up for jury duty. Can you get me out of jury duty? And, you know, these are people that I've helped in their speeding tickets or their little contract disputes or, you know, they got in a fight with a car deal, whatever it is.
The little
legal tidbits I've given advice for at parties over the years. And they don't ever like my answer on getting out of jury duty because I just deadpan and say, no.
I don't even know how you could help. What are they thinking?
They want to know the tips. What should I say?
Oh, that kind of stuff.
Can I tell them I got to work? Can I tell them this? Can I tell them that? Yeah. And my answer is always no, I can't help you. And they, they look at me like I'm crazy, like I'm joking. And I'm not joking.
Right.
Because that is a privilege, unfortunately, that I have never had the benefit of exercising. I've never been on a jury. I've stood in front of many, but never been on one.
The other side of the... Exactly.
And never been called. Like I got a summons one time in Delaware County, but I didn't live in Delaware County. I grew up in Delaware County. I didn't live there at the time. So the voting rules, they still had me for whatever reason. But
I wonder if you're on a list though, that you'll never be picked because you're a defense attorney.
I don't think so.
No. I don't know if that exists.
It's on the voting rules.
Well, okay.
So I've had prosecutors. I've had cops. I've had, there was one even, I think the clerk of courts was even on one of my juries. I've had all sorts of people on juries. Nice. And the reason I say no to this is because this is what makes our system great. It is what makes our system great. And you would say, well, how could it be? The Europeans might even say, I can't believe you have juries over there. You let these, the local riffraff or the lunacy of the public decide these things when you can have these awesome intellects sit and have a judicial panel, these people who are educated and wise beyond their years to... distribute justice, and that is exactly why we love our juries and hate that system.
Yeah.
Because the jury duty, my dad used to say, something happens when the jurors go back in the deliberation room, the Holy Ghost himself descends. That may be an overstatement because who am I to say that God cares about our juries? I've had plenty of clients who pray to God to have a just result or to deliver them from this horrible prosecution. I tend to think you render under Caesar what is Caesar's and render under God what is God's. And I think the local justice system probably is Caesar's.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But jury duty, we can trace it way back. I know a lot of people trace it back to Magna Carta in 1215 with old King John who had to capitulate. But it goes back even further than that. And it goes before it even further than that. But our founders, when we created this, we enshrined it in the Sixth Amendment, trial by jury, of our peers. And the idea was we don't want our elites dispensing justice for fear, I think, of corruption. And, you know, one thing
or even being out of touch.
Out of touch. Have their own agendas.
Right.
I think this is somewhat reflective on the pushback, you can call it the MAGA movement or whatever, but I think it's somewhat, people who watch this show or listen to it regularly know that I always try to find some bigger purpose for this stuff. And I think some of this, if you go back to what our founders were thinking is, we don't need no stinking king telling us what to do. And this is ironic because this is the anti-king protest. Is that what's going on yesterday?
Yeah, coming up.
We don't need no kings. So both sides are saying we don't need a king. Anyway, but it's a pushback on the elites running things and having total control over everything because power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And the idea is the jurors, even if they get it wrong, and what I mean by that is if they let an innocent man go free or I hate to say it, when they convict an innocent man, that's the worst thing that can happen. Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about that. Or let a guilty man go free is what I meant to say. Mm-hmm. You get it. But even if they get it wrong, it's somewhat of a check and balance on the power structure. That if we have, I don't know what kind of case Norm is on. It's who knows.
Yeah.
Or even if it's federal or state or whatever. But it's a check on the power structure. We have, and I'll take criminal cases because that's what I do for a living. And you get a prosecutor who is elected locally. And if anybody who's lived in small counties throughout the state of Ohio or elsewhere, they know that the county prosecutor and the county sheriff, one of two things is either going on. Either they're in cahoots and they're operating together, or they're feuding and they hate each other. And this happens all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But these are the highest power people in a small county. Yeah. And the idea of the system would be a grand jury is convened. In other words, the prosecutor sits a grand jury and they elect to charge somebody with a crime. But, you know, that's not, we don't get to be there at the grand jury. So Comey wasn't at his grand jury proceeding. Mm. And Letitia James was not at hers. And any of these other people, Trump was not at his when these people indicted them. In other words, the grand jury is a secret proceeding operated solely exclusively at the discretion of the prosecuting attorney. I, as a defendant, don't get to say, I want to be there. Let me tell the grand jury what happened. The purpose of the grand jury is to create a bulwark against a, say, overzealous prosecutor. So the idea is to say the grand jury has to find some support for the charge. We want to charge this man with murder, and grand jury, we want you to vote to charge him with murder. And the grand jury, in theory, has to listen to evidence, determine if there's probable cause, just enough to proceed, not beyond a reasonable doubt, but probable cause, mm-hmm. and vote yay or nay. Here's the problem.
So they're kind of a proxy for the defense.
Kind of a...
I mean, to sift through, do you really have a case here?
Yes. The idea is to screen out frivolousness or vindictiveness or prosecution without evidence.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. The old saying now goes, it's now the new saying, the old saying, whatever you want to say, is that a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich, or the prosecutor could indict a hole in the wall. The idea is it's a complete arm of the prosecutor, and the prosecutor gets to decide what evidence the grand jury hears. The prosecutor gets to decide what the grand jury votes on, when they vote, how long it sits, whatever it is. And the grand jury has become this sort of investigative unit. And I'm not saying any of this is bad. I'm saying all this is just is.
Mm-hmm.
It's become an investigative arm of the prosecutor. The grand jury, the prosecutor can issue grand jury subpoenas for phone records. And the Supreme Court may have something, has some stuff to say about that on the Fourth Amendment. But you can subpoena, the grand jury can subpoena witnesses in to testify and put them under oath. The grand jury has all sorts of power like that. And in theory, not even in theory, in fact, the defense can't stop it. Can't stop it. Now, what does this have to do? So that's first grand jury, and then you have the kind of jury that Norm is on, which is our what we would call a Pettit jury. And when I remember going through law school, I was like, well, shouldn't the grand jury be the one that sits in a courtroom? That seems awful grand. And the Pettit jury, the smaller one, should be the – but it's the opposite of what you think it is. Hmm. So the jury in a courtroom is what Norm is on. So you got the grand jury says, yay or nay, we're going to vote to charge somebody with a crime. The courtroom jury says – determines now – are we going to convict this person of a crime? In other words, is the prosecutor going to be able to bring proof beyond a reasonable doubt to the satisfaction of the 12 jurors or 8 in Ohio on misdemeanors and decide whether there is guilt or innocence? So Norm, as we speak, presumably is sitting there listening to testimony. They probably haven't started yet, but they will soon. And he's listening to testimony. The presentation of evidence, I believe it was a criminal case because of some of his comments.
Yeah.
And he's not allowed to talk about it, and he didn't.
No.
But
he just gave us a heads up he wasn't going to be here because of this. Yeah, right.
And that sort of, you know, that is the bulwark against an overly powerful, perhaps corrupt, if you're going to go to the extreme, prosecution. And it doesn't even have to be corrupt to be overly powerful. You know, prosecutors have agendas, and they can decide what they believe. And if a prosecutor believes that a crime was committed, you know, heaven forbid that he not act in accordance with his human tendencies, like to have confirmation bias, to see things he wants to see, or it just so happens that, you know, Trump was charged with a bunch of crimes by a political enemy. Is it because he convicted the crimes, or is it because they wanted to prosecute?
Right.
So you get it. The idea of the jury even though a charge survives the grand jury, now the jury gets to decide it. Mm-hmm. And this is where it's so powerful. I was talking to a buddy of mine who is about, he's in trial right now. And it was a case that I know about because I worked on it a little bit. I'm not going into detail, but it's a very serious case. And we got to talking about this because in that case, the detectives jumped on this train of confirmation bias. And they absolutely did. They just decided that this guy was the guilty one. And the defense then gets to, well, because good defense lawyers then will do their own investigation, will do their own review of the evidence. And it turns out, guess what? There's like three or four other people that could have done it also. And maybe the prosecutor or the detectives didn't look too closely at those people because they were sure they had the right guy. This is confirmation bias. Maybe they got the right guy. Maybe they don't. Mm-hmm. And we got to talking about it esoterically, my buddy and I, in my conference room. And this is not new, and anybody who does what I do will understand this. So I don't mean to be making, this is nothing earth shattering, but the final bulwark against this, the final, the guardian of this type of stuff is the jury in the courtroom. Dare I say, almost shudder to say, it's Norm. Right? So Norman, do the right thing. But I think Norm would be a good juror because I think
Norm
has a tendency to look at everything. He has a tendency to analyze the evidence.
He does.
And he'll argue till he's blue in the face with somebody.
Yep.
But the idea is that when I stand in front of a jury and I say, look, folks, how could it possibly be? Anybody, I ask this of my jurors as I'm selecting them, like, raise your hand, you know? How many people have heard of somebody being wrongfully accused and prosecuted, even convicted of a crime that they didn't commit? Mm-hmm. That would be the wrongful part. And hands go up. How does that happen? And then you get people sort of perplexed, like, how could that possibly happen? Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a couple options. Maybe one, you have a prosecutor who just says, look, I don't like this guy. I'm going to prosecute him. I don't care if he's guilty or not. Maybe I know he's innocent. I'm going to go after him. For all sorts of nefarious and horrible purposes or reasons,
right.
I'm going to prosecute somebody. And then, you know, jurors might say, all right, so you could have a situation where somebody is framed like that, like mm-hmm. intentionally prosecuted by the police or the prosecutor.
Right.
But I don't think that's the most common reason that people get wrong. I think it's because people think they have the right person, but they really don't. People think they got the case correct, but they really don't. And then you would get in, that's a deeper human question, right? Like, how does that happen? How are we not able to discern, a prosecutor able to discern that he's got the right person or she's got the right person? This is this notion of confirmation. Once we're right, we're sure we're right. And sometimes you just got to shake the foundations a little bit and relook at it. So then you would say, you know, the next question is, how many people think that the cases where there was a wrongful conviction, how many people think that at the time that was going on, at the time the person who was wrongfully convicted is sitting right here next to me, how many people think that the prosecutor and the cops and the social worker, whoever, actually knew about it? Well, then you get some more perplexed looks. Oh, well, that's an interesting question. Did they actually know they were prosecuting somebody who was innocent? The answer is probably not. So then I'm going to ask again, how does it happen? How does it happen? Because we've just established that people get wrongfully convicted, not on purpose. How does that happen? And here's the conclusion I always make. Everybody agrees that people can be wrongfully accused and wrongfully charged with crimes. Everybody agrees that, and even convicted. But nobody ever thinks it's the case they're working on now. Nobody ever thinks it's happening in real time, except maybe me over there banging the table and saying, yes, but he's not guilty. And not everybody ever. Look, if I only represented innocent people, I'd be a broke criminal defense lawyer. You know, I'm not here naively suggesting that everybody that is accused of a crime is wrong. But the point is, we have to create this system that is blind. You know, Lady Justice is blind. We have to create a system that protects against it. And the elites, the lawyers, the judges, people in charge, they are not blind. But in theory, the system brings in people who have no interest at all in the thing, and they get to say, yeah, we don't see it. Or, right. Yeah, we do see it. You proved it.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great? And I'll bring this back to a common sense kind of feel to it that, you know, my mind went to where you're describing this whole scenario of like, okay, we latch onto this one idea outside of a jury, let's say like something political that's like, okay, this is right. This is, mm-hmm. I know this is right. And you just keep going down this path because you are bringing in evidence in your head that mm-hmm. I know this is right because so-and-so said this.
Yes.
And it's too bad that we can't have a jury in our world, in our lives, kind of going, these five people, three people, make it an odd number, that just are there that don't care about it. And they bring all this.
They're
your filter, kind of.
Yeah, but what about this?
Exactly.
Or have you thought about that?
And we have to do this internally, though.
Yes.
We have to. And I know this is getting deep. And
No, that's okay,
you know,
because this is a good topic.
Yeah.
This is just called critical thought.
Exactly.
And we have lost it. I think that. And look, to pat our own backs, if I can reach around, my shoulders are bad. This forum, this platform is that.
Yeah.
Because the mainstream media is had. I don't care what you say. Like the legacy media sources, they're had.
Yeah.
All you have to do is go look at all the what do they call them when there's a people put together a series of, you know what I'm talking about.
Like a documentary kind of
stuff? Not a documentary, but people put together these little video segments of the media parroting all the same montage.
A montage
of the media, of mm-hmm. the media, different platforms, unrelated, mm-hmm. all parroting the same talking point. And you can't tell me that's all coincidental.
Right.
So they're all, and you also can't tell me that it's all a conspiracy, but maybe something in the middle is probably mm-hmm. accurate. Like they're all drinking their own Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. They're all swimming in the same fish pond. They all are absorbing the same talking points. And that's that. Or they've all become an arm, I would argue, in many situations mm-hmm. of the Democratic Party. And then you could say on Fox News part, they could argue the same. I don't care.
Right.
But the point is,
it's happening. Yes,
nobody, like we don't have discerning media anymore, I don't think. And maybe we never did. And maybe we were just naive. And now it's been the lights turned on. So we're like, holy crap. Like we took the red pill.
Yeah, you know, and that would be an interesting, you know, not that you or I even have that much time to kind of dissect what Walter Cronkite in our lives really presented. Was he?
He at least acted like he was.
He certainly did, didn't he?
Yeah.
But so do current people now. But
like you get to.
But what age were we when we were watching Grandpa Cronkite? Yeah. You know, I mean, we couldn't discern.
Well,
peanut butter from apple butter.
And the extent to which the media protected Kennedy.
Yeah.
And by protected, yeah. I mean, look, there was just an understood agreement. We're not going to talk about his bedroom activities.
Right.
Fair enough. And then at some point, the gloves come off, and they came off with Nixon. Well, that was sort of ironic, mm-hmm. right? So they didn't come off with – so they came off with Nixon and Watergate and all of that. Yeah. But then those same reporters don't go after the others. So, look, the point is, like you said – if everybody could operate as if there's five or six people in their head asking all the questions that we refuse to ask.
Yeah. Because this show has got me to think, because I know there was a report yesterday, NPR had a story on the Department of Education losing funding to help special needs. Mm-hmm. I'm watering that down. But in the article, it stated that they were talking to somebody at the Department of Education, name unknown, that sort of thing, because they wanted to protect their job, that sort of thing. I get it. And they made a comment about, you know, the general public doesn't realize how many phone calls a day we get from people around the country looking at their civil liberties being disrupted or, you know, taken advantage of. Our funding's helping that. And I thought, well, the next step is NPR. Okay, this person said that. How many calls are they getting a day then?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Is it three?
Is it anecdotal?
Right.
What questions did you ask about what civil rights are
right? And I don't disbelieve this person that they're getting phone calls every day, the amount of phone calls, but what is his qualitative or quantitative of a amount of calls per day? Is it 10? And that means overwhelming for you? Or is it 100?
Or what if it's a million? What are you trying to say with that point?
Right.
And have you vetted any of these? So, you know, the point is that.
You know, just that those thought process of like, it makes me kind of dig a little bit deeper with every story I read going, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You said that, but what?
Yeah. Yeah. So I call them, I would want to know questions.
Yeah.
And I use that here at the table all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I'd want to know a little bit more. I'd want to know, for instance, you know, what's the evidence in the case that Norm is sitting on? Like, what's the evidence? What are the motivations of the various witnesses? et cetera, et cetera.
And when your decision's made, you still have to have that open door to allow yourself to change your mind.
That's right.
And you have to.
A great, it started as a play and then it became a movie and had been remade several times, but 12 Angry Men, I've never seen the actual stage production of it, but the best of all is the old black and white with Henry Fonda and all a bunch of character actors in it.
That's great.
It's awesome, but it shows, you know, like one guy changed it all around.
Mm-hmm.
One juror rather was able to sort of turn the tide the most stalwart eventually capitulated and said, all right, fine. I go with it.
Yeah. Because he was in the mind. He had the confirmation bias.
Yeah. I know this guy.
I know this.
He's a scumbag.
I know this kind of guy.
He's a street
urchin,
whatever he would say.
What a great example of confirmation bias of that guy in that jury. Yeah. Yes.
And then in the idea of the 12 coming together with different viewpoints, in theory, it's not perfect, mm-hmm. right? It's not perfect. Yeah. But they get to say, yeah, but don't you want to know?
Mm-hmm.
How about this look at it? And look, again, the jury system isn't perfect. It's only the best.
Right. It is. Yeah.
Right. So argue with me. You want Europeans. You're wrong.
Yeah.
I hear this all the time too about lots of stuff. Well, in England, they don't do it. Or in Europe, they don't do it this way. It's like, yeah, we left.
Right.
We do it this way.
Right.
And we do it this way for a reason.
Right. Right.
So, you know, the idea, this was a good jumping off point to hit some of these topics. Like, look, the bigger picture is, if we operated as if there was a jury system asking the hard questions all the way through, you could expose mm-hmm. the bias, the motives, even those that aren't intentional of those who are making the decision. So that's the idea of this.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to the next topic. We talked about Comey and Letitia James. And, you know, I saw, I'm not going to dig deep into these, and I think other sources have probably beat this horse to death, but I do think it's worthy of a little bit of discussion about what is, in fact, what they're arguing. Because I saw Comey was going to file a motion to dismiss based on vindictive prosecution.
Mm.
There's a kissing cousin called selective prosecution.
Okay.
Vindictive prosecution, when a prosecutor retaliates against a defendant for exercising a legal right, violates a due process clause. So the idea would be if there's a retaliatory prosecution. So we see this come up sometimes in criminal cases where, say, my client wins the appeal and then they enhance the charges coming back. That might be called an invictive. Okay. So he wins the appeal, gets a new trial, and then we come back and they say, all right, fine. Look what you did to us. Now we're going to indict you again with more. That might be a vindictive prosecution. This goes back, for those legal geeks, North Carolina versus Pierce, 1969. Supreme Court first established the doctrine of vindictiveness in the context of judicial action. Due process prohibits a judge from imposing a harsher sentence on a defendant who successfully appeals, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then there's a litany of cases that all talk about this. And I think what's going to happen here is you're going to see Comey filing claims or motions to dismiss based on vindictive prosecution, but he's not going to win. He's not going
to
win.
Is that a heavy bar to prove?
Yeah, it's a heavy bar to prove. And, you know, there's some burden. Basically what's going to happen is, I think this is why I've said at the table here, it would be best if we're going to prosecute people for these crimes, investigate everybody, investigate people.
Right.
Now, and the other argument to be made here is, that the common Joe is being prosecuted for this kind of stuff. So if you can't tell me that the IRS, if discovered that I was lying on my tax returns and taking deductions to which I'm not entitled, that they wouldn't prosecute me, you're categorically wrong.
Yeah.
So I think the opposite's probably true. Yeah. There are people who have not historically been prosecuted because of who they are, rather than now they're being prosecuted because of who they are. I think that's how the argument's going to shake out.
Gotcha. Okay.
Meaning, look, and that's why I've said, look, if Trump wants to do this, or if the DOJ, not Trump, but if the DOJ wants to do this, I'd like to see everybody's tax return in Congress.
Yeah.
Let's take a peek. Yeah. Let's see what you're doing.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, let's treat everybody the same. I mean, I would be all for it.
Yeah. Because I know Comey was coming in kind of cocky to this. Like, bring it on.
And Comey wasn't a tax return, but he's indicted online.
But, you know, he's feeling very confident
that
bring it on. Bring it on. I'm fine. You know, I don't know what he's hanging his hat on.
He's saying bring it. Because look, the Dems did the same. Like, they put people in jail on the other side. So this is what you get. You get this little tit for tat. But The vindictive prosecution. Now, selective prosecution is if it involves some sort of discriminatory approach, where if you are selecting somebody based upon maybe political speech or a suspect class like age, race, gender, something like that, and only prosecuting those types of people who engage in that conduct, but not others who engage in the same conduct, it violates equal protection. So the first would be due process. It's just fundamentally unfair to be vindictive. And then selective prosecution is selecting based on your category of who you are, where you sit. So I think we're going to see both those arguments in those cases. Mm-hmm. And this is why, again, this is why I would say, look, if you're going to go after one, go after them all. I have no problem with a policy that the federal government says, look, if we are going to hold our citizens to a standard of integrity based on our tax laws, or based on responding to subpoenas and showing up in Congress or whatever it would be, then let's hold our political leaders to the same standards, right? Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't we? We're sponsored by Harper Plus. I'd love to get Glenn in here and say, look, because I've talked to him about lots of clients I've represented who are prosecuted for tax stuff. And I'm like, look, don't tell me you wouldn't prosecute me if I did this, or at least treat it. Sometimes maybe it would just be a penalty and an opportunity to file a amended tax return. And you know, then it would shift back and say, well, look, you're giving most people an opportunity to file. The point here is that look at everybody for the same conduct, and if you're going to prosecute one, look, you can't catch everybody, but
But it can't be selective in yard. Well, we're going after her or him
because, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, because it's a D or an R behind their name. Yeah, exactly.
There's another point that I think is worth making is that they're in almost all sentencing, or this might be a little bit meandering, but I'll get to it. Sentencing factors and consideration, both federal and state courts and everywhere I've been, they always have factors that make crimes like supposedly worse than others. So if you have the same conduct, what makes it worse? What makes it not as bad? What makes the person worse? What makes the person not? How egregious is the same conduct? Because, you know, you can commit the same crime, but it could be worse. One of the things that almost always makes a crime worse or treated differently is a position of public trust. Mm-hmm. So we treat those who are in a position of public trust historically differently than we treat those who are not. So the clerk of courts who's got his hand in the till stealing money, we treat that with a little bit more severity than we do the person at Walmart who's got his hand in the till stealing money.
Right.
Same crime, but look, this person held a position of public trust. Mm-hmm. And I think that also is true with respect to who we charge. I think I've represented plenty of attorneys over the years who have engaged in misconduct, and you know, they say, well, this isn't fair and whatever. It's like, look, man, we are cloaked with this idea, this oath we took to uphold the law. And we're going to be held to a higher standard on lots of levels. And that may mean we get targeted for the same conduct that others aren't. So there's that too.
Yeah.
You know, these are people.
Yeah, a Walmart employee does not give an oath that I will not steal from this company. Now, it's implicitly implied when I hire you, you're not going to steal from me.
And they don't hold a government license.
Right.
That says, look, I'm supposed to hold myself to higher standards.
Right.
And then not only do you not do that, you commit crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So these people, I think they fall short because of this. And I think the other problem is that they were banting around, like, look, you know, they put themselves on Front Street. Good or bad, right or wrong.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you know, you did it.
Yeah.
So there's, we will see how that all shakes out, mm-hmm. but I think those fall short. I don't presume to know how either case will come out, but, you know, I don't think the vindictive or selective prosecution defenses will work.
Yeah. And I also, you know, those that are rah-rah-rahing these, you know, kind of vindictive feelers, like, well, it's their turn now. It does have to stop.
We cannot
continue this every time a new person's in power with a different letter behind their name. Then all of a sudden, it's like, well, now we're going after you. We're getting nothing done.
It's almost like we cross the Rubicon of this stuff. And how is there a way back?
It just takes somebody to say, no, we're not going to, right?
And then
ultimately?
And then Norm would be here saying, yeah, but they committed crimes. I'd be like, well, yeah, but, you know, it's like, I know. There's no end to it.
I know.
So,
but it does seem to be very, again, you know, not using the legal
like
term,
it's targeted.
It targeted, exactly. It does.
Like getting targeted, yep.
But to your point, it may solve itself if you did a wide swipe of, okay, we're going to look at everybody. We're going to look at all.
At least you could help the appearance of it.
Yeah, I guess.
You could. So look, as I've said before, I would love to see an investigation into the tax returns of everybody on Congress.
Yes.
Like, why not? It's just look.
Right.
Take a peek.
They held their hand up.
Yep.
Right.
So they're holding us to a very high standard. I want them to at least have the same standard.
Maybe it should be done every 5-10 years. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you get some congressmen out of office by then, but you could do a look back.
Yeah, take a peek.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. You know, we keep talking about that we are not able to see all the paperwork and all the dealings of them. Jobs Ohio, bringing it back to Ohio. Well, same thing. They're, you know, congressmen, senators. They're in our public trust.
And again, this is why we have juries, because if you have, say, these people are being prosecuted, and the people, the entity, the people, those who would sit in judgment over them, if they are these people's peers,
yeah,
is that going to be fair? Is it going to be biased towards them? Or if they are the prosecutor's peers, is that going to be fair? Or is it going to be biased in a negative way towards those people?
Yeah.
But the theory is you bring in the people and say, all right, you got yourself here, but we're going to be the arbiters of what really is the truth here. And don't think the truth is exactly the truth, because the truth is what is proven in a courtroom on any particular day. That's different than my fundamental understanding of morality and truth. But that's the goal. We ascribe, right. we at least try. But, you know, I've had plenty of cases where, I'll give you just the most fundamental, simple example. The first witness says this happened on December 23rd, 2024, when really the incident we're talking about happened on December 23rd, 2023, and it never gets fixed.
Hmm.
For perpetuity, the record will show that this crime happened on 2023. In public record. That is the truth of the case. That's how it is from there on out. Now, that may not be a big, but there's other bigger examples you can come up with, but you can see how it happens.
But it does have, okay, so yeah I could, well, all of a sudden a stopwatch starts at that time. So an appeal or.
It could have significance.
Or sealed records could be based on that 1 year difference.
It could be. And to the extent it matters.
Big example. But,
we try to catch it and fix it. But that kind of crap happens all the time. Mm. But the idea here is to come into a courtroom, have a unbiased viewpoint of the evidence that the prosecutor thinks they have.
Yeah.
And look, for those who are all in favor of skewering Trump with however many felony convictions, they would say, look, our jury convicted him. Trump would say, yeah, you brought it in New York. How about some other state and see if you get the same? So who knows?
Right.
Like I said, it's not perfect. It's only the best.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, look, we are shifting gears here. We happen to be in the midst of a government shutdown? I mean, is that
I believe, yes, we are, aren't we? Yes. Yeah, I think all of October is a Halloween kind of month, it seems like.
You know what's funny about
15th
this?
Or 16th day now, something like that?
What's funny about this is, I'm not being callous to those who aren't getting paychecks and those who are losing their jobs.
Right.
But like for the simple, normal person on the street, does anybody know any different?
I don't think anybody's feeling it yet.
Not yet.
Because from what I'm understanding, we'll start to feel those that are tied to those paychecks, because I think the paychecks go out the 16th or something like that.
Yeah, so they're going to their paychecks getting held back. And then some people are starting, like, look, Trump is playing a Trump card, and he's saying, fine, I'm just going to lay you people off for good.
Exactly. So you'll start to see, I think, the ripple effect of, you know, car payments not being met. Mortgage payments not being met
for the paycheck to paycheck.
So those,
so look, I don't mean to be callous about this,
right? No, I don't, and true, I, me either. But I think the rolling effect, the domino effect, starts to happen after that first paycheck does not get out there.
Yeah, and I think that's probably when enough will be enough.
I wonder. And I think it's, you know, and I'm hearing kind of middle of the road podcasters talking about, it's like, okay, it's both parties' fault on this. We can get this done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically just keep it going so people don't get hurt from it. And well, and this, you know, the talk of, well, the Democrats are doing this to you. The Democrats are doing this to you. And we have airports not showing the, you know, Kristi Noemi video about, you know, her air traffic controls or something. Exactly.
They thanked her. They thanked Saturday Night Live. Like, thanks for getting the message out.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I think you're right. I think maybe that first paycheck being missed may be a pain point that kind of goes, okay, enough.
All right, enough fun and games, DC. Let's get this thing done.
Right.
So let's pick apart what you and we kick this around. I don't profess to be an expert on the shutdown.
No.
But here's how I see this. The Republicans, they didn't reach their agreement on the funding.
Right.
The Republicans passed a short-term clean continuing resolution, meaning, mm-hmm. all right, we're going to agree to disagree for now. At least, and back then, that was on October 1st.
Yes.
They were going to just punt the ball to November 21st,
mm-hmm.
a clean continuing resolution. And this is not without precedent. This is usually what happens.
Right.
We can't agree now, so let's just keep arguing, but let's at least keep the status quo.
Yes. Let's keep people getting paid, the armed forces being paid. It just yep. continue on.
So at least for on the Republican side, hats off for you for not demanding more.
Right.
But saying, look, let's just keep it the same so we don't have to shut down.
Right.
Now this is the Dems would say that was a political ploy because they knew that we had no choice if we're going to protect humanity, democracy, and everything else that's holy in the world, we would have to shut it down because this is so bad.
And it never, historically, I heard somebody talk about this too, that they looked at it in history that anybody that's on the opposite side of, no, we're not going to, never win. Republicans never won doing this.
No, they never won doing this.
Democrats right. don't win doing this.
This is,
they never do. That. Why do you, historically, why not look at history and go, those that oppose the extension,
I think
it never works.
I think they're trying to just tank. Look, it's really difficult to like. Trump has done a lot of good stuff. Hate him or love him, whatever. Like we may have peace in the Middle East now. I guess there's Hamas terrorists now.
As my wife says, crooked lines.
Yeah, that's
crooked
right.
lines. You know, it's like, okay, you may have a person you don't like, but it got done.
It got done, right?
Or it's going to get done.
It looks like it's going to get done.
Let's
right?
hope.
So look, I mean, it's hard to. You can't detract on that. And I think the Dems would do well to at least acknowledge it.
Yeah. Oh, like, yes.
At least acknowledge it.
Biden and Obama came out and congratulated Trump, I believe.
Oh, good for them.
That yeah. saying, good job.
Now, Biden's guy, you know. Who was Biden's guy? But he said, well, that was because Biden laid the groundwork for it. That's nonsense. Biden did nothing to lay the groundwork
well,
for it.
Well, and it would never would have happened under Biden because they just didn't, you know, Israel didn't like Biden.
Well,
it wasn't going to happen.
But Trump's just got this unique ability for whatever personality, and I'm not even going to call them traits, maybe even personality flaws, but he's got this ability to go around and get people to like him. And then he can go back and cut deals with them and do things with them. So he set up the entire region
mm-hmm.
and then goes back and gets everybody on board and gets this done. And, you know, maybe good personality trait, bad, but he does that stuff.
He does it.
He cuts these deals. He gets this stuff done.
Yeah.
He also carries the heavy stick the big stick when he needs it, as Iran learned.
Mm-hmm.
So like he got it done. And Biden did not have that kind of mettle. I don't care what anybody says about it. He did not. And Harris wouldn't have either.
No. Probably not. You're right. Probably not. We'd almost have to look at it from what we know of her and what was
laid chance.
In front of her. I doubt it.
Do I have a crystal ball?
No. Well, she has the Biden after effect, the hangover that it wouldn't have. They wouldn't have talked to her.
Yeah, they weren't going to.
I think
she was not going to go.
She would have had a lot of work to do if she was going to get it.
Push her chest into that region and say, get this stuff done.
Probably
no
not.
Chance.
Probably not.
No chance. But anyway, I can't remember where we were going with all that. But.
I did interrupt you. I didn't mean that. But
anyway, we were talking about the clean bill.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So the point here is that where are we going with that? So the Dems on this accord, the Dems have drawn the line in the sand.
Yes.
They're the ones that drew a line in the sand. You can take your hats off the Republicans, at least for not asking for more. The Dems drew a line in the sand.
And Democrats want dingleberries hanging out on this stuff.
They do.
It's like,
oh,
here's
what I say. They want to hang a crappy economy on Trump. And this is their way of trying to do that, I think. I think, or to try to expose or try to expose him. And this is what we'll get to is to say, you're just trying to take the Affordable Care Act from those who need it or whatever it is. So we end up with this sort of media stalemate where one side is saying, look, we never said that we were going to give health care to the Dems, saying we never, this isn't about giving health care to illegal immigrants. And the Republicans are saying, yes, it is. And they're saying, nah, yes, huh, nah, yes, huh. The media on this side is saying, nah, look, we can't find it anywhere in the bills or in the Affordable Care Act. Right. And the Republicans are saying, yeah, but you're looking in the wrong place, but we can't find it. You can't see it. You can't find it. You can't see it. So here's what I think is going on.
I love the way you're putting it. Exactly. It's like a sideshow.
It's a bit of a shell game.
It's a shell game.
And
exactly.
It reflects, the answer to this, I think, reflects how dirty is not the right word, deceptive at times the politicians can be.
Right.
And here, I think it's the Democrats. And maybe I'm wrong. But I think what's going on is this. The Affordable Care Act does not indeed say on its face, we're going to supply health care to unlawful immigrants.
No.
Republicans are saying, yeah, but that's what's happening. How could that be? And then the big, beautiful bill comes along and says, we are no longer going to let that happen. So the Republicans would say, well, look, if it's not doing it, then why are you objecting to that?
Right.
Well, then the Dems are stuck with this position saying, well, we don't need that in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what's going on is there are funding provisions in the Affordable Care Act that permit or that that the federal government reimburses states for healthcare expenses that supply healthcare to illegal immigrants.
Okay.
So the feds could say, the Dems can say, look, the Affordable Care Act doesn't do it, but the states are doing it and we're paying for it.
And that's, you're talking Medicaid or Medicare?
Medi-Cal.
Medi-Cal, okay.
California's a good example.
Gotcha, okay.
Medi-Cal, I think, got $8 million or okay. $8 billion, I don't know, $8 billion.
Probably, nothing's an M anymore,
million, right.
It's always
that's right, $8 billion
B.
reimbursed from the federal government. They bailed out Medi-Cal.
Gotcha.
And that probably is a lot of money that went to illegal immigrants.
Okay.
And I think the big, beautiful bill, I think, was designed to sort of put a halt.
Stop that, the reimbursement situation. So, yeah.
So why then?
Well, why are we connecting the dots on this show and it's nowhere else?
Well, because
you know what I mean?
Here's
I mean,
what's going on.
The way you explained it,
I
don't see it out there, but.
I might be wrong, but I think that's, I've heard that from the Republicans.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I, not that I'm following it in depth, I only see a few talking heads about it, but I've never heard it
but the media
explained
is not
that
doing
cleanly.
It may be more complex, but I think it's something like that.
Yeah. Right.
I think it's something like that. And, you know, but I don't think you even need to go that deep into it. You can just say, if you're on the Republican side, the big, beautiful bill passed, guys.
Mm-hmm.
It passed. You didn't like it, but it passed. This passed.
Yeah.
You can't use a shutdown to undo that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's where this really is going. And I think the line in the sand the Dems are making is trying to make this political point that you're depriving everybody of health. The Republicans are depriving everybody of health care and entitlements and blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's a political move.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make the Republicans look like they are secretly not funding health care for people that need it. And I don't think, I think maybe your point, the point to be made here that you just made is the messaging on both sides is not the cleanest.
It's not.
Yeah, it's not.
Because you're right. It's a, but you said, no, but you said, no, but we're not saying that, but no, we're not saying that.
Yeah. It's just this mess.
It's this mess.
And confirmation bias on both sides is preventing anybody from actually digging into it. So I don't watch the network news very often, but I watch it for purposes of just sort of keeping involved.
Sure.
And it was on in the background of somebody's house I was in over the past week, and I heard him talking about this, and I was thinking, they're not giving the whole, this isn't the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it was presented as truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's troubling to watch. I mean, it's we, the American people, need to be the jury of our government. We need to be the jury of our government, meaning we need to listen to our peers. We need to listen to get all the facts that we can get and then make informed, discerned decisions on what is right and wrong. And the people telling it to you on the news aren't doing that.
No. And it's more and more difficult to find that middle ground, what is going on. Other than I'm wishful thinking that it's out there. It's probably not. I think there are sources that are trying to be. I think they're trying, but there's always going to be a bias because we're human.
You're going to get but that's a right wing media.
Exactly.
Group.
So do we have to listen to one side and listen to the other side? how much of each side do we have to listen to? And then how, in our mind, we have to marry the two going, okay, where is the truth between the two when we're being fed bullshit on both sides?
And when I was a young history major in college, we were always encouraged, like back then it was like original sources, original sources, mm-hmm. original sources, go back to the original sources. You can't, because there are thousands of pages of nonsense in these bills that don't make any sense at all. You can't read this crap. You couldn't read this crap if you...
I was listening to somebody read the deep dive that Speaker Johnson told them to go to. It's a link. And he's reading going, I don't even understand what you're saying.
Right.
Because it's referencing way too complicated. It's way too complicated. And we're pretty damn smart.
Smart or not, I don't have the time.
The time. You know, I mean, so, and I'm not saying dumb people can't understand it either. I'm just saying we've made it so convoluted that this writing, it stops you from wanting to dig into it.
Well, you shouldn't have to have a higher... I don't mean to hang the ability to make these decisions.
No.
Look, anybody who reads a bill, when I write a legal brief, the idea here is to write it so anybody can understand it. Meaning, it's not that it's highfalutin, mm-hmm. but I think a lot of times we use highfalutin language either to sound good or sound smart or sound whatever. I would much rather read See Dick Run.
Because
at least then I know what's going on.
Exactly.
And when you couch your argument in rhetorical, metaphorical crap that nobody can understand, it doesn't make any sense. I learned this reading.
Now, I wouldn't want the Constitution as a See Dick Run.
It was written that way, though, in the time.
At the time, it probably was. That's true.
It was true. It was written in common language.
Now, because our
language has evolved.
But, yeah. You know, because I know, you know, the Constitution and our Bill of Rights and such, I mean, it's, I don't want to call it generic enough, but wide scope enough that, what did they mean?
Right.
What's that mean?
We hold these truths, right? So we, like, it was really sort of, they sort of did that then because it's not self-evident.
No.
All men are created. It is not.
It was not,
but we just proclaimed it as if it were.
Right.
Now that was a little bit of a stretch. I happen to agree with it, but it's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, for sure.
For the intellectual thought of the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, I mean,
because it gives you that nod of going, yeah, you're right. It is self-evident.
We are
created, you know, right. it has that reaction.
Nobody ever said that before like that.
Exactly.
And it was very simple.
It was.
This is self-evident. We're all created.
We are, aren't we? Yeah.
Yeah. I read a book. I should look it up. It was a reporter wrote it, and it was on the Duke Lacrosse scandal at the time. And he was sort of taking apart the structure. Really, it was DEI at the time. You know, mm-hmm. Taking apart the structures that would have gotten these kids prosecuted and why they believed just completely nonsensical allegations by these. Mm. And he did this. He had a chapter or two. I can't remember how many. He dug into some of the, quote, intellectual credentials, bona fides of the academics. And he was reading, like, some of the nonsense that these academics had written. And it was impossible to understand. Like, they had written these historical articles or whatever. And he was reading it, and it's like, nobody can understand this gobbledygook. Mm. And I remember it struck a chord because it was right after I graduated college as a history major. And I remember one of my higher level classes was to read and offer critiques of some historian's crap. And I couldn't freaking understand it. I remember sitting there reading it over and over and over and thinking, I don't understand what this person's saying. How can I? And of course, I blew it off till the last minute and I was doing like whatever.
It was the old
3-to-5 page paper.
Yeah, right.
That I had to crank out in the last hour before it was due. And I'm reading this thing and I'll just wake up, read the article and do something really quickly. Yeah. And I couldn't understand it. I mean, I could not. I read it. I tried to diagram the paragraphs and the sentence. Like, it made no sense. And this Duke Lacrosse author, I should look up the book. It struck such a chord. And what's ironic is my critique of the article was that I finally just decided, I was like, I don't get it. I don't understand it.
So that's your paper. I love it. That's great.
I was like, I tried to read this. There's some missing logic in here. Maybe the point is this, if you believe the first thing and the last thing, but the points don't add up in between. You know, if the conclusions are accurate, this author would do better to make it more clear. I got an A.
I love it. Oh my gosh.
And
because you were honest about it.
And my
you know, you weren't playing to what you thought the professor wanted.
And
you were on it and just say, you know what? I'm going to lay it down the line here.
This is stupid. It's just gobbledygook.
And the point you're trying to make, professor.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great.
And she wrote, it's funny when you're a kid, when you're a college student, you love the praise of the praise. She wrote good stuff. And I'll never forget. I saw her little penmanship, good stuff.
Good for her.
But the point is, I've learned something from that. And that is what we're trying to do at the table. Break it down, make some sense out of it. And if you can't, if I'm wrong about our synopsis of what's going on with the healthcare and whatever, at least then we've been able to state something. And people understand what we're trying to say, and they can say, no, it's not that, but it's this.
Okay.
It's something a little more nuanced. But you can build on that at least, because we've broken it down to something that makes some sense.
Yeah.
I try to do that with law. I try to do that with politics. I try to do that with everything I read. If you can't do it, if you can't understand it, then if people can't understand what you're writing or what you're trying to say or what you're trying to do, then it's meaningless.
Right.
It's all a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
And then you would have to ask, almost with skepticism, what are you trying to conceal?
Right, because there are steps missed. So what are you hiding in those steps missed?
Yeah, in this flowery language that nobody can possibly comprehend.
Because you're using it to jump from A to C, and that B part, you just don't have a handle on it.
Or you're redefining words. They do that a lot, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that crap going on. Well, it's not racism if it's this kind of this and this on this. That's not racist. And everybody else reading it, well, it looks like racism.
Yeah.
But no, because we've started with a different definition than the one you've grown up with. So, you have to have a common Plato. I think it was Gorgias. Socrates is debating this rhetoric, and they couldn't come to a common understanding of what the terms are.
Mm-hmm.
And Socrates, I'm probably butchering this too. It's going back to college, but Socrates basically says, "Then we have nothing to talk about. We have no common understanding of terms. We can't even debate. I can't even argue with you." The point Socrates was making was a bigger one, and that is that rhetorical debate is not as honorable as, don't take it just, Socrates probably wouldn't like what I do because I can champion arguments that I know that aren't for the moral good or whatever. You know, I'm going into a courtroom fighting, and the idea of the legal system is I can pick up any torch and argue it.
Yeah.
And the rhetorics would do that back in Socrates' time, and Socrates is saying that's not a noble way to argue. But anyway, the bigger point or the more interesting point to me is Socrates saying, look, if we can't agree on a certain baseline, then we can have no discussion further.
That's very true. We've continued to change the definition of a word or a phrase. Yeah,
morph around.
We morph around and we lose sight of wait a minute.
Which
5 years ago, it was this.
And maybe says something bigger about our fundamental concept of morality in Western civilization.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We have taken up almost an hour.
Yeah.
Let's talk about good, bad, and ugly. Anything good or bad?
You know, not a lot of bad that I've seen other than just the normal crap, you know, that sort of thing. My wife and I went to, Ohio has a national park. Do you realize that? The Cuyahoga Valley National Park.
I did not know that. I know there's a national forest.
It's a freaking national park. It's based along the Ohio Erie Canal, basically, all the lock system.
Oh,
so they built it around that. 1974. It's a pretty new national park. So we went up there on Saturday. Absolutely gorgeous. I would encourage. It's not shut down through the shutdown. You know, limited, use, that sort of, not use, but people that are there. But they had volunteers that were actually saying, yeah, I'm not really supposed to be here, but I'm here, sort of thing. So, you know, they felt the need to want to be a part of that. But, oh my gosh, gorgeous, gorgeous park. And it's free because it's a national park, but it's in our backyard. Easy for, now we're in Columbus, simply 71 to 271, boom, you're there. It's basically where the Blossom Music Center is, well, too, which I want to catch a concert there sometime. I've heard the acoustics is fantastic because it's built into
Blossom that's been there forever? Yeah, I've seen lots of shows there. That was back in my days when I would experiment with substances.
Right.
I was still drinking alcohol back then.
Right.
So I probably wasn't focused on the acoustics.
I'd love to go back because I've heard good things. I just haven't. You know, there's not been a show that I really wanted to go. But anyway, I had a great time. Good Ohio, we got a national park and it salvaged a canal system that, has the original towpath for 20 miles, fit 30 miles.
It's pretty cool, and we've got a little town called Canal Winchester, real close. You can go see some of the landmarks.
Yeah, and I think there was also, what did I see? Oh yeah, I don't have my phone on me. A new world record for a pumpkin weight.
The pumpkin show. That was going to be my gig.
I figured you might go there. Yeah,
I I have got some ties to Circleville, Ohio. Yeah. Pickaway County, Circleville, Ohio, the home of the largest free show on earth. Mm-hmm. Now, I dare you to go to Circleville and call it a festival. Because it is not.
Was it at one time, though? Did they change the name? How did it? Why is it called?
I don't
people
know.
Call it that. That's so
why
wild.
Is it a show? Probably so they can say it's the largest free show.
Show, okay.
But festivals aren't
it
shows.
It never was a festival.
Because we have a definition okay. that says there's probably a bigger festival, but this is a show.
Show, okay.
Now, I know that up in New York, there's a place called Elba, because I've been there with my college roommate, the Elba Onion Festival. That's a festival. Onion Festival. And I think Obetz has a... Are they onions? Is Obetz the I can't remember
garlic or herb? No, that's
might be, Obetz might be the onion.
Maybe it is. Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, sorry about that.
This is a show, and they have these enormous pumpkins, and people down there they start like all year, and they engineer these huge pumpkins. It's pretty incredible.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you like crap food, and by that I mean fried cheese on a stick that's breaded, pumpkin waffles, elephant ears. $2 extra for the pumpkin cream sauce. There's always the huge line at the... I was there last night, so I know.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
There's always a huge line at the bourbon chicken rice and beans place.
Ooh,
now, there's like 15... There's like 15... There's probably five different places you can get bourbon chicken, but there's one that always has the big line. And I guess that's the one you want. Mm. There are lots of parades. There's a pet parade. There's a pumpkin queen that has its own parade. I went down there one year in the Ohio... University marching band, which is a really cool marching band.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest band in the land is one thing. They're the best damn band in the land is one thing, but the Ohio University got a pretty cool band too.
Okay, that's cool.
They do a little dancing. It's fun.
Yeah.
They came through. So lots of good stuff at the Pumpkin Show. Check it out. The other good news is that on 23 South, which is where you'll be heading if you're coming from Columbus to go to Circleville, mm-hmm. there's a little town called South Bloomfield.
Mm-hmm.
And South Bloomfield used to not have a turn lane, meaning if you got caught at one of those lights with somebody turning left in front, I mean, it was a mess.
Yes.
They do now. So they nice. Just finished the construction. I drove up this morning, and there, lo and behold, there's a left turn lane. Now, it's shared both ways, but at least then if you're turning left, you're not going to screw the rest of us. So
nice.
You can get there a little bit easier than before, but plan for traffic, plan for parking. It's all a headache mm-hmm. at the Pumpkin Show, the greatest free show. On the planet, as far as bad goes, I don't know. We've talked about it. I'm sick of the shutdowns.
Yeah.
And it the good goes, Trump is. I mean, look, there's lots of good stuff in the world to be thankful for.
Yeah.
Let's
hope the peace.
Hopefully, he's made some peace.
I let's hope it does. Yeah, because it that area needs to rebuild.
Yep.
It just got to stop. It just and has then, to stop.
Oh, and finally, stop. I meant to. And finally, I promised I would talk about Ohio State is kicking ass and taking names. They are. Are they the best damn team in the land and have the best damn band in the land? We shall see. Indiana, hats off.
Ranked.
Doing great. Signetti.
Doing great, yeah.
You change that program around. Penn State, you're at the bottom again. Sorry.
And a new coach in? Or
they, not yet. They not fired, yet. They fired wow. Franklin. And,
did you catch his payout?
$50 million.
$50 million.
That's not a bad retirement plan.
Good grief.
Not a bad retirement plan. But there's all sorts of rumors floating around that they're trying to poach. The latest was they were going to try to poach Ryan Day himself and offer him an exorbitant. Ohio State's a destination job.
No, you don't go there from here.
Our offensive coordinator Brian Hartline might be a better target if they're going after that, but we'll see. I think Hartline is probably an Ohio State guy too, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But lots of rumors floating around about the Jim Franklin replacement. But Ohio State's still number one. We will see if they can keep that ranking as they march forward with Wisconsin this weekend. Mm-hmm. I like the way Ryan Day has sort of let his team grow in a controlled way.
Mm-hmm.
But as the doubters would say, maybe largely untested so far, we shall see.
I don't know. That first game of the season is pretty much a test.
Yeah, but Texas then tends to fall apart. Texas has sort of fallen apart, but we'll see. The playoffs mean everything now. The regular season means far less than it used to. Either way, this is Common Sense Ohio coming at you, sponsored by Harper Plus Accounting, right from the middle each and every week until now.
Are you an entrepreneur who doesn't know when to pick up the phone or get out the keyboard to contact your CPA?
A lot of people are like that. And one of those things that you have to figure out when is the right time to do that is when you feel like you don't know what's going on. How much money am I making? How do I pay my taxes? I'm running my business out of my checkbook and I have no clue what's going on. Do I don't know if my employees are making me money. I don't know if my products are making money. I don't know which way I'm going. I'm upside down. I can't concentrate or can't think about anything other than where the heck am I, instead of thinking, how do I grow and continue on my business? That's when you should call.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to have a tax question in regards to that, drop it in the comments and we'll try to get back to you.